If I were to pursue in detail the days and nights that followed, I should weary my readers. I can only say they changed my life. The solitude, the solemnity, the mystery produced an effect I did not profess to understand, but that I cannot regret. I have hesitated about writing of the end, but it must come, so let me hasten to it. Though feeling convinced that no human agency did or could keep the door open, I was certain that some living person had means of access to the house which I could not discover. This was made apparent in trifles which, in my solitary position, it was impossible to overlook. A chair would be misplaced, for instance. A path would be visible over a dusty floor. My papers, I found, were moved, my clothes touched. The fact remained that when I went to the post office and while I was asleep, someone did wander over the house. I was about to write to Mr. Carrison and beg permission to have the door where the valet had slept broken open, when one morning I spied a hairpin lying close beside it. What an idiot I had been! If I wanted to solve the mystery of the open door, of course I must keep watch in the room itself. The door would not stay wide unless there was a reason for it, and most certainly a hairpin could not have got into the house without assistance. I made up my mind what I should do, that I would go to the post early and take up my position about the hour I had hitherto started for Ladlow Hollow. I felt on the eve of a discovery, and longed for the day to pass, that the night might come. It was a lovely morning. I flung the hall door wide to let in the sunshine and the breeze. As I did so, I saw there was a basket on the top step, a basket filled with rare and beautiful fruit and flowers. I was very fond of fruit in those days, and seeing a card addressed to me, I instantly selected a tempting peach, and ate it a little greedily, perhaps I might say. I had barely swallowed the last morsel when Lord Ladlow's caution recurred to me. The fruit had a curious flavor. There was a strange taste hanging about my palate. For a moment sky, trees, and park swam before my eyes. I smelt the fruit. It had all the same faint odor. Then I put some in my pocket, walked round to the farmyard, asked for the loan of a horse, and in less than half an hour was asking in Ladlow to be directed to a doctor. He was at first inclined to pooh-pooh my idea, but I made him cut open a pear and satisfy himself the fruit had been tampered with. "It is fortunate you stopped at the first peach," he remarked, after giving me a draught and some medicine to take back. "I should like to retain this fruit and see you again tomorrow." We did not know then on how many morrows we should see each other. Writing across to Ladlow, the postman had given me three letters, but I did not read them till I was seated under a great tree in the park. Hitherto there had been nothing exciting in my correspondence. On this occasion, Mr. Carrison's letter greatly surprised me. He said Lord Ladlow had released him from his bargain, that I could therefore leave the hall at once. He enclosed me £10 and said he would consider how he could best advance my interest, and that I had better call upon him at his private house when I returned to London. I do not think I shall leave Ladlow yet a while, I considered, as I replaced his letter in its envelope. Before I go, I should like to make it hot for whoever sent me that fruit, so unless Lord Ladlow turns me out, I'll stay a little longer. Lord Ladlow did not wish me to leave. The second letter was from him. "I shall return home tomorrow night," he wrote, "and see you on Wednesday. I have arranged satisfactorily with Mr. Carrison, and as the hall is my own again, I mean to try to solve the mystery it contains myself. If you choose to stop and help me to do so, you will confer a favor, and I will try to make it worth your while. I will keep watch tonight and see if I cannot give you some news tomorrow," I thought, and then I opened Patty's letter. The best, dearest, sweetest letter any postman in all the world could have brought to me. If it had not been for what Lord Ladlow said, I should not have chosen that night for my vigil. I felt ill and languid. I had lost energy in a most unaccountable manner. The long, lonely days had told upon my spirits. In no sense was I fit for the task I had set myself, and yet I determined to go through with it. Why had I never before decided to watch in that mysterious chamber? Had I been at the bottom of my heart afraid? In the bravest of us there are depths of cowardice that lurk unsuspected till they engulf our courage. The day wore on, the long, dreary day. Evening approached. The night shadows closed over the hall. The moon would not rise for a couple of hours more. Everything was still as death. The house had never before seemed to me so silent and so deserted. I took a light and went up to my accustomed room, moving about for a time as though preparing for bed. Then I extinguished the candle, softly opened the door, took up my revolver and put it in my pocket, slipped softly downstairs across the hall through the open door. I felt a thrill of terror as I stepped over the threshold. Noiselessly, I made my way to the other side of the room. There was an old-fashioned easy chair between the bookshelves and the bed. I sat down on it, shrouded by the heavy curtain. The hours passed. The moon rose, came and looked in at the windows, and then sailed away to the west. But not a sound, no, not even the cry of a bird. Every part of my body appeared twitching. It was agony to remain still. The desire to move became a form of torture. Ah, a streak in the sky. Morning at last! Heaven be praised! Had ever anyone before so welcomed the dawn? A thrush began to sing. It was the morning twilight. Soon the sun would rise. Soon that awful vigil would be over. And yet I was no nearer the mystery than before. Hush! What was that? It had come. After hours of watching and waiting, after the long night and the long suspense, it came in a moment. The locked door opened, so suddenly, so silently, that I had barely time to draw back behind the curtain before I saw a woman in the room. She went straight across to the open door and closed it, securing it with bolt and lock. Then, just glancing around, she made her way to the cabinet, and with a key she produced shot back the wards. I did not stir. I scarcely breathed, and yet she seemed uneasy. Whatever she wanted to do, she evidently was in haste to finish, for she took out the drawers one by one and placed them on the floor. Then, as the light grew better, I saw her first kneel on the floor and peer into every aperture, and subsequently repeat the same process. Standing on a chair, she drew forward for the purpose. A slight, lithe woman, not a lady, clad all in black, not a bit of white about her. What on earth could she want? In a moment it flashed upon me. The will and the letter! She is searching for them! I sprang from my concealment. I had her in my grasp, but she tore herself out of my hands, fighting like a wildcat. She hit, scratched, kicked, shifting her body as though she had not a bone in it, and at last slipped herself free and ran wildly towards the door by which she had entered. If she reached it, she would escape me. I rushed across the room and just caught her dress as she was on the threshold. My blood was up, and I dragged her back. She had the strength of 20 devils, I think, and struggled as surely no woman ever did before. I do not want to kill you, but I will if you do not keep quiet. Bah! She cried, and before I knew what she was doing, she had the revolver out of my pocket and fired. She missed. The bullet just glanced off my sleeve. I fell upon her and seized the weapon. She would not let it go, but I held her so tight she could not use it. With her disengaged hand, she tore my hair. She turned and twisted and slipped about like a snake, but I did not feel pain or anything except a deadly horror lest my strength should give out. Could I hold out much longer? She made one desperate plunge. I felt the grasp with which I had held her slackening. She felt it too, and seizing her advantage, tore herself free, and at the same instant fired again blindly and again missed. Suddenly there came a look of horror into her eyes, a frozen expression of fear. See! She cried, and flinging the revolver at me, fled. I saw, as in a momentary flash, that the door I had beheld locked stood wide, that there stood beside the table an awful figure with uplifted hand. And then I saw no more. I was struck at last. As she threw the revolver at me, she must have pulled the trigger, for I felt something like a red-hot iron enter my shoulder. and I could but rush from the room before I fell senseless on the marble pavement of the hall. When the postman came that morning, finding no one stirring, he looked through one of the long windows that flanked the door. Then he ran to the farmyard and called for help. "There's something wrong inside," he cried. "That young gentleman is lying on the floor in a pool of blood." As they rushed around to the front of the house, they saw Lord Ladlow riding up the avenue, and breathlessly told him what had happened. "Smash in one of the windows," he said, "and go instantly for a doctor." They laid me on the bed in that terrible room and telegraphed for my father. For long I hovered between life and death. But at length I recovered sufficiently to be removed to the house Lord Ladlow owned on the other side of the hollow. Before that time I had told him all I knew, and begged him to make an instant search for the will. "Break up the cabinet if necessary," I entreated. "I am sure the papers are there." And they were. His lordship got his own, and as to the scandal and the crime, one was hushed up, and the other remained unpunished. The dowager and her maid went abroad the very morning I lay on the marble pavement at Ladlow Hall. They never returned. My lord made that one condition of his silence. Not in Metershire, but in the fair county still, I have a farm which I manage and make both ends meet comfortably. Patty is the best wife any man ever possessed, and I am just as happy, if a trifle more serious, than of old. But there are times when a great horror of darkness seems to fall upon me, and at such periods I cannot endure to be left alone.